We are Ingrid and Hara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey.
We are glad to present you a special edition of our Business of Collaboration podcast. During three podcasts, we will interview three keynote speakers of the ISPIN conference in Florence, Italy, on 17th of June. ISPIN is the International Society for Professional Innovation Management. Its members represent many sectors, including the research, industrial, consulting, and public sectors. The conference in Florence celebrates innovation and 500 years since Da Vinci and addresses three critical challenges: industry, university, a new vision of cooperation, open innovation, and lean startup in corporate innovation portfolios, building invisible companies. This is our second Business of Collaboration podcast, together with ISPIN Florence Conference. We interview Joanne Hyland, founder and president of the R Innovation Group and former vice president, New Venture Development at Nortel Networks.
I've been through the phases of starting in marketing and being a product manager and then going into service development, which at the time, we did not call innovation, but now incremental innovation and product development are kind of used interchangeably. And I did work in that capacity for a number of years to bring in a big project across Canada. And then from there, I got into negotiating international joint ventures and working on strategy around long-distance competition, and then becoming director of new business opportunities, and then moving into the Nortel position. And then, of course, we've been running this company now since 2001. And the whole idea is that there's been a lot of learning through each of those steps that helped me to see more about what works for innovation and what doesn't work. And each of the roles I moved into started to sort of fill some of the gaps around how to make innovation management work. And now, there's probably three areas that are kind of all coming together. One is, of course, we've been working at this for coming close to 20 years now in a consulting capacity. But also, I've been involved in the ISO community, helping to draft the Innovation Management System standard, which is very different from a process. And so I think that's starting to happen. And then the third part is really, you know, being on the ISPIN board and the ability to have an impact in the innovation management community. So those are kind of just a little bit of the background about me. And I would say that my whole life has been almost pretty much dedicated to innovation.
Yeah. When did you realize like innovation is the path for you?
Probably when I was a kid. Like I said, you probably wouldn't have called it that back then, but I was easily bored with just doing things the way you're supposed to do them. I was always looking for new and better ways to be able to approach different opportunities and problems as they came along. And so I did a lot of things that was probably atypical of children or even teenagers, where not only was I involved in sports, I was also coaching a team at a very young age. I did things like umpiring, where, you know, normally it was the adults who did it, but I was the only umpire that was 14. And so I always did a lot of things that really pushed me to be better, change things. And I've always been really passionate about how to make a difference in the world. And so that came from the time I was very young.
Yeah, I remember when I was, like, I don't know, walking to a school from my house with friends. And I think I was 10
years old, and they asked me about what you want to do when you are adult, you know, the typical question. And I said, I want to become an inventor. I want to create new things. But I was coming from a small village, and then for me, the capacity of how far I can go, it was not clear. So I was thinking, okay, television is already invented. And so I don't know what I can do, but I want to do new things. Yeah, I think it's you have this inner call so soon in your life.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's sort of an inner calling. And that, I think, you know, it's fascinating that you had the same types of questions or, you know, sort of ideas, but not really knowing how. And I think that's also a big part of innovation, is that you have to have the courage to take the risks, not knowing what the outcomes are going to be. And you just kind of have to go from one learning event to the next, and eventually you get there. And what you know as a child, or what you knew 10 years ago, is very different from what you know today. But you always have to be in a continuous learning mindset in order to be successful as a person that is in actually embracing new things and working in this whole space of innovation. Yeah.
So I'm super impressed. Like, I am like speechless. I'm almost like you were in the organization and in the team to create a standard for innovation management.
Yeah, well, and also, I have to say, I came in at kind of late in the game. Magnus Carlsen, who's from Sweden, he's one of the Swedish experts. I met him a number of years ago at an ISPIM meeting, in fact, and he was very familiar with the work we were doing with companies and also the research that was going on at RPI at the time through Professor Gene O'Connor, who's the lead researcher, the director of the program. And so he's been encouraging me for a number of years to start getting involved in this, because he knew that we were working on the innovation management system level, which is very different, as we were saying before, than being at the process level. And we wanted to get involved, but it was just a question of time and being busy and so forth. And then in the last year, I attended my first meeting in London in March of 2018, and then went on to the meeting in Porto and Tokyo, and then the most recent one in Stockholm. So I've been involved for about a year. And so I came in when most of the standard had already been drafted, but there were some areas that were missing as it pertains to thinking about this from a system point of view. And so I know that Magnus really wanted me, even if it was late in the game, to get involved in some of the discussions. And so, you know, I really admire what everybody has done to get the standard to where it is. And my contribution was very small comparatively, but we did get a few really important points solved around how strategy is different when you're dealing with innovation than when you're dealing with more just a strategic planning kind of exercise. So we focused in on that, and we got really important issues around the idea that you have to manage uncertainty alongside of risk, and that uncertainty is more the world of what you don't know yet, and risk is the world of what you know. So there were a few areas where I came in and really helped to focus the conversation there. And we also needed to ensure that we had good innovation management representation, because many of the countries' people that were represented came more from having been involved in the drafting of quality standards and now looking at, you know, what does innovation look like? So there were some people in the room that did not have the same level of knowledge around innovation management than some of us did. So that's kind of how I got involved in the standard. And I've always believed in the system, because the first book that came out around it, which was the second book in the series, but Grabbing Lightning back in 2008, was really about how do you build a system for breakthrough innovation.
Yeah, and I think it's very important, because it's the business perspective. So, like, what is leadership in business is, like, you don't know nothing. So it's about risk management and a bit of uncertainty. So being good and comfortable with knowing nothing almost about the future in some degrees. But You think there is this relationship between business leadership and innovation leadership?
Definitely there is. The challenge is that most of the leaders in especially the large established organizations have come up through the operational side of the business, and they don't really have the experience and therefore the real understanding of what does it take to pursue innovation opportunities, especially those that don't fit well with the core business, and things like business model innovation, where you're coming up with new business models that will challenge the status quo. And when you're dealing with more strategic innovation and you're coming up with opportunities where you really don't have the answers yet and you can't put a business case forward because you need to do learning before doing that, that's kind of where there's often a disconnect between what is required for innovation leadership and what is required just for more business leadership. And the leaders that are on the operational side, a lot of them intellectually understand it when you tell them the story, but because they haven't had the experience, they have a tendency to slip back into asking questions that people that are in innovation roles cannot answer yet. And that what ends up happening then is that the innovation opportunities that could have been larger and more impactful and bring more value to the company and to the market end up getting incrementalized because they get brought back to what people know rather than what could be possible.
Yeah. So I think now I have the question in mind is, what is innovation for you?
Well, innovation kind of takes on different forms. And if you look at what's been going on in the ISO world, and there is a lot of confusion about innovation, about what is it and what can it do and can it or, you know, should it even be formally managed? Like, some of those are questions because people think about innovation often as serendipity, where you get people together in a room and then all of a sudden you come up with these wonderful new innovation ideas. And so for us, innovation is not an idea. It's really a management discipline that is tied to innovation management. It's about being able to look beyond the status quo and create new opportunities, like ideas that become opportunities. A lot of times in the product development world, they talk about ideas and then you go and develop them. In the world when you're starting to deal with higher uncertainty innovation, the ideas get shaped into opportunities, and then those opportunities get tested through incubation, through experiments. And so for us, innovation is actually much more around change management and how do you change an organization. And so we see a lot of organizational innovation associated with it, not just sort of the process type of level, and that's where the system also comes in. So, you know, so the bottom line for us is innovation is really about changing mindsets, changing organizations, and ultimately bringing impactful and the right type of value into the market.
Yeah, I think this is the point of innovation about this change management, or it's a change at least.
Right, right. And as you get more systematic about it, it really is about transforming organizations.
Yeah.
So it is about, you know, transformational change.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. So how did you fund the innovation group after working at Nortel Networks? What was the trigger for you?
Okay, so maybe just to kind of go back a little bit to the Nortel time. From the research and from a lot of the experiences we were seeing is that many companies recognized that they needed an ability to do more than product development, and it came under different names. It could be called corporate entrepreneurship or corporate venturing or internal venturing or whatever. And I was the vice president at Nortel in charge of doing the internal venturing side of things. And what we were really doing was investing in our R&D from our labs and then creating little business startups within the context of Nortel. And then deciding after we had done sort of the discovery work and the incubation work deciding when we got to the acceleration side of the equation, whether we would spin it into one of our divisions because it was closer to the business that they knew, or whether we would spin it out and let the market forces drive the growth of this particular business startup. And at the time, the idea was is that these large established companies struggled to be able to do it inside, so you're better to send it outside. And that was a lot of sort of in the Innovator's Dilemma book that came out, that was a lot of what was pushing this type of a phenomenon at that time. On the other hand, in parallel, RPI was studying what should large established companies do in order to be successful in the more radical or breakthrough innovation space. And we were actually being studied as a part of that. And as with most of these programs that got launched by companies, they had a life cycle of about 3 to 4 years. And the problem was always that it takes longer to get to results because you're dealing with opportunities that are more complex, and it takes longer, therefore, to be able to get them to the market and generate the kind of revenue to compare with what would be doing, going on in a business line. So at Nortel, we hit that 3 to 4 year timeline, and they decided at from a strategic point of view that for Nortel, it would be better to go after bigger mergers and acquisitions and integrate them into the company rather than trying to build organically from within.
Ah, interesting, because they were almost pioneers on the venturing. So in the entrepreneurship or startups venturing inside the corporate, like now companies, they are adopting this way and it's almost like a trend. So, but in the 90s, no, you were doing this in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. We did it from, I was at Nortel from 1996 to 2000. And our program was featured in Fast Company magazine. It was studied by the conference board. It was actually a very good program that we had created at the time. And what's going on today is very similar to what we did back then. So that, so it's not much different. We've learned a few more things, but it's still pretty much the same premise. So when they decided to shut down the program, I had a choice of going back into one of our divisions and maybe doing a business development role. And after you've run an internal venturing group and you've, we placed 12 investments and we had a, portfolio that was worth a lot of money and a lot of people were involved. Like we had over 200 people involved on the team. Going back and just doing a business development job didn't make a lot of sense. So I decided to leave Nortel and I started working in the startup world for about a year, helping startups to formulate their value propositions, develop their business plans and so forth so that they could go in and seek investment. And at the same time that the RPI research started to wrap up, and as it was wrapping up, the book Radical Innovation came out. And with that, they started getting asked about consulting with companies. And so they came to me and asked if I'd be interested in running the consulting job associated with forming the R Innovation Group, and which we actually called the Radical Innovation Group at the time. But ironically enough, the word radical was too radical to be able to be accepted in boardrooms because we do deal at the strategic level. So that's why eventually we changed our name to R Innovation Group. So the R could be radical, but it can also be about reinvention or redirection or whatever. So that's now, I've been doing that since 2001. So it really came with the shutting down of the Nortel program and then the ramping up of the outcomes of the research and the first book and companies getting interested in learning how to do this.
So you have written these chapters in this very popular books on radical innovation.
Actually, I did not write the chapters. In Radical Innovation, I was actually the one of the executives that was studied. So we had one of our investments, which was called NetActive, and it was about being able to rent software over the internet. It was definitely the right idea, but it was too early because the broadband support, you know, the whole network wasn't in place to enable it. But that was the venture that they studied. And then they also studied how we were organizing and structuring for innovation at Nortel. And so the input that I provided and also other members of my team was really having them study what we were doing. And then they looked at what we were learning along the way. And a lot of that was featured in the cases that were captured in the Radical Innovation book. So it was more about being an executive that contributed rather than writing any chapter itself. And then with Grabbing Lightning, when that came out around, I had my own book, but that didn't come out until after Grabbing Lightning and after Radical Innovation, because then Grabbing Lightning came out, which was about building a capability for breakthrough innovation. And there I was an expert resource because we were already out in the field designing innovation management systems before the book came out. And so we were really looking at the parallels for what does it take to design a system and then comparing it with what was being captured through the research. And then I have written some chapters in other books, but not those two. And then ultimately in 2013, I wrote the book Pivot with a co-author. And that book was really taking what had happened from the research point of view, what we had learned from the research perspective in the context of what was summarized in the Radical Innovation book and the Grabbing Lightning book, but making it much more of a how-to. So it was really around, well, how does this work within companies and what kinds of tools have we developed to enable the learning and help these opportunities to progress and so forth. And my co-author wrote from how this could be applicable more in a startup environment. And I wrote from the point of view of how this would benefit established companies.
And now after, like, if you can reflect on your life and professional life on innovation management, what is the work you are most proud of?
I don't think I can actually say that there's an area that I'm most proud of from a work point of view, because I think the work is still very much a journey, and I can see where we are, but I can also see where we're going to go. And being the A type that I am, and, you know, always thinking about the future and knowing there's so much more to be done, I wouldn't say that the work part is what I'm proud of, but what I am proud of are the people that I've worked with throughout the years and how together, you know, we've developed each other. And, you know, there's a few people that have, you know, told me that if it weren't for my leadership during the times that they were on my team, they wouldn't be where they are today. And that's kind of where I feel proud. I feel proud to see that one of the guys on my team, I coached him both on a professional level, but even just on simple things about how do you go out into a business environment and have the right kind of table manners and things like that, like really fundamental stuff. But he wrote back to me, and now he's, you know, vice president at the Bank of Montreal out in Alberta. And he said he would never be where he was today if it weren't for those dinners we had together and all the professional conversations and so forth. And another guy was now, I've gone back because he's originally from Prince Edward Island, but Garth always said to me, you always knew how much freedom to give me. And when I was just about to walk off the cliff, then you would just yank me back. And so those are the kinds of moments that make me feel really proud. And now we have our new team in Denmark. And it's really nice to watch them grow. And we work together. And it's a delight just to be with them. And so it's really, for me, being more about the impact of working with people and helping them to learn, and obviously for me to learn in the process. That's what I'm more proud of.
Yeah. And from which failure did you learn the most?
Well, I don't think it was one failure, and I don't kind of look at it as much as a failure, but as these learning points along the way. And like, as I mentioned, I've been in this, you know, I've had the whole mindset around innovation for, you know, as long as I can remember. And then I've been in number of roles. And I think what I learned is that if you don't have the right setup within the corporate environment to make this work, then you're really going to struggle. And so, you know, some of the failures that we experienced as a team was because we didn't have the right ingredients for success. Like we could, you know, we were looking at new business opportunities when the internet was emerging, and we identified a lot of really great opportunities. But when you go to the board and you present these opportunities, and they can only see that it might displace their international toll traffic because they don't see it beyond having a data division and a long distance division, then you know that there's something really missing. And so that failure was the fact that we had this great team, but we had no ability to be able to carry it through because we had no funding, didn't have the right organizational structure, and so forth. And so, you know, so that was one area where, as a team, we were not successful. And Nan being in the leadership role, I wish I could have seen it then, because I didn't see it the way I would see it now. And then the same thing when getting to Nortel, it's that if this isn't going to be relevant from a strategic point of view for the future of the company, and knowing how to kind of make that very clear, then you fail as well in a leadership capacity, because that's also extremely important. So I've taken some of those understandings of how we failed because of the conditions we were in. And now when we go in and work with companies, there's times where we'll say, if you don't have the appetite for this, if you can't stay in this for the long term, then don't even start. And, you know, you're going to waste your time and you're going to waste your money hiring us to do something that just won't work. So I think you get probably from the failures you've seen or from the conditions that made you fail, you get a lot stronger and a lot more courageous as the years go on, because you just know what will happen if it's not done properly, and it's better than to walk away.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of the points of you learn the most when you have these experiments than if the things are going always very good.
Right. Yeah. You remember more what didn't work than what did work.
Yeah. So you are a speaker at the ISPIN conference in Florence in Italy. What are your main points you are going to talk about?
So we have actually two sessions that will be going on, both related to the work that's happening in the international standards organization area for how we're going to actually, now that the standard has been developed, get it out there. And a lot of people in the innovation management space think that having a standard for innovation management is actually an oxymoron. It's counterintuitive. And so, you know, we have a role to play in explaining that this actual standard that's coming out, it's a guidance standard. It's not a requirement standard. So it's really to help to guide companies. It's not prescriptive, and it's really around starting to create the common language and so forth that's really important for us to come together as a community. So we've set up two sessions. One is on the Monday afternoon, and we're going to be talking about the progress on the innovation sort of body of knowledge that needs to be created for this, and what does it mean from a personal certification point of view. And we're also then going to introduce the innovation management system standard, and also talk about the innovation management assessment that has also been developed through the ISO work. And so that particular session is really going to be about bringing together the pioneers. I mentioned Magnus Carlsen earlier, but also someone else from Norway and someone from the UK. And they will then facilitate more the table discussions and talk with the ISPIM community about what does it see going forward, about what's really important for being able to move the standard to something that could be accepted and adopted by the innovation management world. And so we're going to use those four topic areas as a lead-in to the session the next day on Tuesday. And of course, I'm representing ISPIM, being on the board of ISPIM, and I'm also the Canadian expert on the ISO committee. So working with my colleagues, we're going to have, different countries that are represented, different issues we brought forward from the Monday afternoon. And then on the Tuesday morning, we're really going to focus on the progress of the Innovation Management System Standard and hearing from the pioneers. So those that have been involved in pioneering it. And, we will be getting into questions that will come from, obviously, the Monday session about what we hear from our community, but also getting these pioneers to talk about why did they get involved in the drafting of this standard in the first place and what kind of value do they see for it? And, what does it mean to focus on innovation management as a system rather than a process? And then some of the advantages and the disadvantages that they see for different kinds of interested parties like government and academia and industry and other. So we're really starting to kind of unveil what this is all about. And then, of course, as being a speaker and a facilitator, I'll probably be going back and forth between the speaking role and talking about the experiences from an ISPIM and a Canadian point of view and being involved and also helping to moderate or facilitate this with Magnus, where we're going to be the co-facilitators.
Yeah, I think I will go there. So now I have some questions about you as a person to know you better, because as you mentioned, like innovation is working together with people. It's a system. It's not only a process. So here are some quick questions to end the podcast. So what is your favorite place for going on holidays?
Okay, so I thought about this question, and I travel a lot. I've been to over 50 countries at this point in time, and it's very difficult for me to just pick one place because each of the places I've been offer different opportunities to learn from a cultural point of view and so forth. So we have travel that's more culturally oriented, and then we have travel where we go to this one place every year to just relax and do nothing. And so I would have to say that, with the kind of work we do, you just need some downtime. And so I would say my favorite holiday spot is when we go and take those 3 weeks and do absolutely nothing, which is when we go to Curaçao, down in close to Venezuela, Aruba in the Caribbean. I would have to say that that's my place to refresh and replenish.
Yeah. How do your mornings look like? Do you have a routine?
Well, when I'm home, I have a routine, but because I travel a lot, I'm probably gone at least 2 to 3 weeks per month. But when my routine at home is when I wake up, my dog Bella is there. So she comes and we cuddle together for a few minutes. I get lots of morning kisses from her. And then I get up and we go downstairs and we have breakfast. I make her breakfast and I make my own. We spend time together. And then I always have my favorite cup of tea. And then I get to the office and start working. So that's pretty much my morning routine when I'm at home.
How do you like to spend your spare time on weekends?
And Friday night, I feel like it's the night where I don't have to worry about doing anything right away, and I know I've accomplished a lot during the week. Now, when I say I don't have to worry about doing anything right away, in this kind of work, when you run your own company, you don't really have weekends, but you need to find downtime, and I think you probably know that. So, a weekend for me is not, oh, well, I have the weekend off, and I'm going to go do a whole host of other things. A weekend for me might be, well, I got to go to the market in the morning and, see the vendors and get our food and things like that. But it's not about having a weekend free. So that's why I like Friday nights, because it's that sort of in-between point.
Do you have a favorite podcast?
Actually, to be honest, I don't have time to listen to podcasts. So, yes, I could have said, oh, yeah, this one and that one. I have a list of ones that I would love to have more time to listen to. And one of them would be Women Who Travel, because I do read Condé Nast Traveler magazine. Like, that's sort of my magazine that I try to read every month and make sure I go cover to cover. So that would be one of the podcasts that I would like to have a little bit more time for. But at this point, I really haven't gotten into doing, you know, finding the time and doing what's required to set aside the time in order to listen to podcasts.
So the last question, who would you like to be as well interview here in this podcast?
Well, I think given, you know, what's coming up, and I know we don't necessarily have the time for Florence because it's just around the corner, but definitely my colleagues that will be with me at this sort of the two sessions, which are obviously Magnus Carlson and Martin McGurk, who's from the UK, and also Marcus Sobad Benzies, who's from the Norway. They would definitely have a lot to say about, you know, the journey we've been on together and what's happening from the ISO new standard. And then also one other person that has been involved just recently in representing Denmark is Jimmy Norman Christensen. And so he's also getting up to speed quite quickly on what this topic is all about. And he's very much into innovation management and where is it going.
Yeah, I think we can organize maybe a table where we can record a podcast there all together.
Okay. Well, they'll all be there, and I know they'd be delighted to have the conversation.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find us a map of this podcast with pictures and interviews at noco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is NoCo Platform. See you next month.